Speaking on this program is Franklin Kemp.
The fruit of the Spirit, which is the effect of the gospel in a person's life. The book of Galatians tells us that the gospel of God's grace is intended to change the way we think. For our mind is to be filled with His mind, to have the gospel in our mind and heart. In turn, that produces fruit in our life. And you notice that the word fruit is singular. So all these things go together. We have learned that the fruit of the Spirit is love, peace, joy. Where there is no love, there cannot be joy. And where there is no love and joy, there cannot be peace. Where there is no love and joy and peace, there will not be long-suffering or patience. And that's the next thing that's mentioned. These, I think, develop in an order. And we need to try to think about them. If we're having a problem, as many of us do, with the principle of long-suffering, we need to check back on the love and the joy and the peace that's in our life. In the absence of these, it's difficult for us to be long-suffering or patient. And so I want us to think about the importance of being patient. Jesus said that we are to be of good cheer, for He said He'd overcome the world. And in Luke 21:19, Jesus said, "In your patience, or long-suffering, possess your soul." Luke 21 tells about the fall of the Jewish state, the tremendous tribulation and trial and suffering that people would go through with, Christians would go through with, leading up to that. And He reminded them that in their patience they were to possess their soul. When we fail to be patient, lacking in long-suffering, we let things get out of hand. We do not have our soul under control, in possession. I read one translation that said, "In your patience, win your soul." And I like the idea that's set forth in that. Think about some of the characters in the Bible that were impatient, and some of the problems that grew out of that. For example, in the 13th chapter of the book of 1 Samuel, we have the account of Saul, who was king over Israel, of making a grave mistake because he was not long-suffering towards Samuel. He was not patient in Samuel's delay. Samuel had told him that he had met him. But I read in 1 Samuel chapter 13 and verse 8 that he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And so Saul got upset. Now watch what's going to happen. And Saul said, "Bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offering." And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. And Samuel said, "What hast thou done?" And Saul said, "Because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering." And Samuel said, "Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which He commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever." I'd like for us to think about that incident. What happened? Here was a man that saw in his mind the nation being scattered. concerned about that from a personal standpoint. He became agitated. In addition to that, over here were the enemies, and he were afraid they were going to attack. And in the midst of that, and out of his impatience, he violated the will of God. He did what he wasn't supposed to do. Lacking in patience and waiting for Samuel to come, he engaged in activities that he would regret the rest of his life. It was the beginning of a road that would finally lead him to ruin. For this is not the end of what he did. Chapter 15. He violated the will of God further. But I'd like for you to notice that this chapter points out that the beginning of the problem that Saul had was a lack of patience and of long suffering, and the indication of the serious nature of his impatience was that it affected his relationship with God, and it had an effect upon his continued reign over the kingdom of Israel as later time would come. So, being impatient, he followed his own will instead of the will of God. Being impatient, he was lacking in faith. If God placed him over the kingdom, if the Philistines were the enemies of Israel, as long as Saul was faithful and led the nation in their faithfulness to God, why be concerned about what the Philistines would do? But you see, his impatience and lack of faith contributed to his self-will. Isn't that what happens to me? When I become impatient, I tend to take things in my own hands. Why? Because of a weakening or a lack of faith. And in so doing, there is the grave danger that I'll do just exactly what Saul did. I'll transgress the will of God. Impatience, then, or a lack of patience and a failure to be long-suffering can create problems for us. Listen to what the psalmist had to say about the importance of it. In Psalms chapter 25 and verse 3, the psalmist said, "Yea, let none that wait on thee be ashamed. Let them be ashamed which transgress without cause." Now just put the word patient there, the word long-suffering, in the place of the word wait. That's what the word wait signifies. Let them that are patient, or that are long-suffering, that wait on God, let them not be ashamed. Psalmist said, by being patient and being long-suffering, waiting on God, leaving things in God's hands, we're not going to be ashamed. And see, that's exactly what happened to Saul. He failed to wait on God, to be patient and long-suffering, waiting for Samuel to come. And instead of not being ashamed, then he was ashamed because of what occurred. But listen again to what he said. "Lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation." Now listen. "For on thee do I wait all day long." Look at the language. On thee do I wait. How long? A little while? All day long. Have we learned to be patient all day? In the midst of some of the things that we are confronted with in our trials and tribulations, how soon does our patience run out in our long suffering? The psalmist said, we need to learn and wait upon him all day. Listen again to what he said in verse 21, that same chapter. Let integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait on thee. Look at the language. Integrity and uprightness. How do I maintain integrity and uprightness? Through patience. Waiting on thee. That's what the psalmist said. What happened to Saul again? He did not maintain his integrity and uprightness. Why? Because he was impatient. How often is integrity set aside? Uprightness defected because of my impatience and because I become impatient. Listen again to what the psalmist said in Psalms chapter 37 and verse 7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently on Him. Do what? Rest in the Lord. The word rest carried with the idea, don't get agitated. All right, now what do I need to do? Not become agitated. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Look at the next phrase. Fret not thyself. Now, just think about the words in that passage. Don't get upset. Rest in the Lord. Don't be agitated. Rest in the Lord patiently. Suppose I don't. Fret not thyself because of him that prospereth in the way. Can you not see that rest in the Lord, waiting patiently, brings about the avoidance of fretfulness? But if that avoids being fretful, stressful, then the other side of it isn't doing what he said. And so listen, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him that prospereth in the way, because of the man that bringeth evil devices. So, here in the Old Testament and the Psalms were many times written under stressful times, out of the experience of life. The psalmist had learned the value of patience and the importance of it. Think again of another example. In Genesis 12, God said to Abraham that in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Time rolled on. Abraham didn't have any seed. In Genesis 15, Abraham said, let my servant be the promised seed. What's happened? God said, in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. A number of years have rolled by and that promise hadn't reached its culmination. It hadn't been fulfilled. And Abraham is beginning to feel the stress and the strain. And in the midst of the impatience, wanting God to do fulfill that, and thinking that something has happened to the promise, he said, here's a servant. He'll be a good one. Let me suggest that he become the seed to fulfill the promise. God said, No. You move right over into chapter 16. I don't know if Sarah knew what had taken place in chapter 15 or not. But in chapter 16, Sarah becomes impatient. And she said, Abraham, we're not getting anywhere. There's the promised seed, but we don't have any. Not only that, we're not going to have any. That's an impossibility. That's not going to happen. And so she said, I have a suggestion to make. Take Hagar, the handmaid, and let us help God fulfill the promise that he made. And perhaps Abraham's impatient also contributed to his agreeing to what she said. And because of that, Ishmael was born. And so later on, Abraham would say, let him be the seed. And God said, Didn't I tell you that he's not going to be the seed? That in Isaac shall thy seed be called. What happened now to Abraham? Think about it. The man that God could rely upon whenever he wanted to find somebody that would begin a movement in the world that's one of the most unique and unusual the world had ever known. Men adventure for many reasons. But Abraham is unique in that he became an adventurer, leaving behind his homeland, going out into another land that he knew not, and not even knowing from day to day where it's going to be. And all of that because God called him and said to him, that in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. And yet that man, in spite of all that he had been able to accomplish and the unusual man that he was, became impatient. And from the Ishmaelites came the Arab world. And the struggle developed between the Edomites, the Ishmaelites, and the Israelites. And that struggle still going on today. It hadn't ended. And likely will never end until finally this world is over. Because of the impatience of the one that we read about who is the man of faith, the father of the faithful. That further should tell me how important patience is, and at the same time, if Abraham had to struggle with it, I need to remember that it's not going to be an easy thing for me. Listen again. James, the fifth chapter, James said, be patient, therefore, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it, until he receive the early and the latter rain. You don't plant seed, it'll soon be time for Brother Bowers and the garden, I hope, because he put a whole lot of stuff in my deep freeze. So I hope he'll be ready to garden right away. But you don't go out and plant seed, and the next day go out there and scratch around and want the seed to be sprouted. And you don't go out and the next day or two and expect to get tomatoes off a plant you set out last week. We watch them. But we have to learn to be patient, and we can't rush it. You can go by and look at a tomato plant and talk to it every day and say, get on with it. I want a ripe tomato. And you can just get agitated about it, but that's not going to change it. That's the illustration that James used. He said, be patient. Like the farmer that plants his seed. I need to learn that same principle in relationship to my life and in living the Christian life and my relationship with others. To be patient and long-suffering. But that's not the only thing that he says about it. He says again in the next verse, be ye also patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. So again, patience is necessary for strength or for stability. Unless we develop the characteristic of patience and long-suffering, even in relationship to our own life, we'll be unable to develop a stable life. Impatience with my shortcomings and my failures lead me to get to the place where I say, well, what's the use? Just throw up my hands and quit. But patience says, that's what the Bible teaches. That's what I need in my life. That's what the Bible requires. That's a characteristic that belongs to a Christian. And though I fail this time, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to continue to work and to work and to work and to strive and to struggle and to grow. But patience and long suffering is necessary if that's going to be done. But that's not all that he says. In the next verse, he shows the importance of patience in relationship to other people. Listen. Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door. Look at the relationship now between grudging and impatience. It affects my relationship with others. How often, as a father, did impatience affect my relationship with my children? I wanted them to grow up. It's hard for parents to realize that in some ways children must be children. Sometimes we expect too much of them. And whenever that's true, we become impatient with them. And whenever that happens, then we are not effective in helping them grow up as they need to grow up and learn some things that they need to learn. The same thing's true with our brethren. It's easy for us to become impatient with brethren. We think that people ought to be strong where we are strong. Now, we don't like to think about our own weaknesses, do we? If they happen to be weak where I'm weak, then I can sort of be patient with that and understand why that is. But if they're weak in an area where I feel like I'm a little bit stronger, then it's not that easy to be long-suffering and patient with people. But James said we must learn how to be patient. If we do not, then it affects our relationship one with another. And so often that's the case. But then he gives another illustration. Take the prophets. I take my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering, affliction, and of patience. Think about Jeremiah. What he faced. They wouldn't listen to a thing he said. They had become so hardened until when Jeremiah would pray for them, God said, don't do that. They won't turn from their sinfulness. And without penitence and confession, pardon is not possible. Don't pray for them anymore. Jeremiah really had a job. One time he said, I want to quit. I'm just so tired and weary. I'd like to quit. And then he said, his word was in me just like fire. They put him down in a well. But Jeremiah remained faithful to the end. Think about a man preaching, 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 praying, and even calling upon God. Won't you pardon? And God said, no, I can't. Their impenitence of heart blocks the door of mercy and grace and pardon. But Jeremiah wants you to keep on, keep on, keep on, and keep on. And he did that as long as he lived. That's patience. That's long suffering. Jeremiah is one of the great prophets of the Old Testament. When they asked Christ, whom do men say that I, the Son, or when Christ asked the question, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? They said, some of you say you're Jeremiah. No wonder. And therefore, the importance of it. But then look again, verse 11. Behold, we count them happy which endure. You've heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord. And the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. Think of all the trials that Job went through. Even his friends came in. And sometimes friends can be rather difficult. His friends came in and Job just suffering, and they said, straighten up your life. Don't you know you're a sinner? If you'd straighten up your life, then you'd get rid of that. And Job said, I know that's not the case. I just know that's not the case. His life had been upright. And then he talked about how that there's the widow and the orphan that he had cared for. And think about all that he went through. And finally, when you come to the book of Job, Job said, I've said too much. I'm going to shut my mouth. I don't have anything else to say. I'm going to listen to what God has to say. I've learned my lesson. And then the record says in the 40th chapter that Job prayed for his friends. Think about it. Here are people that have said, Job, you're a sinner. Straighten up your life. And through all the ordeal and the affliction and the suffering that he went through, out of his patience, as described by James, had come an understanding about life. Appreciation and things that he'd never understood before. And because of that, to the very ones that had said, you're just a sinner, Job prayed for. And so James then, in the first chapter, tells us that patience is necessary in the midst of suffering to develop a balanced life. Unless I learn through the trials and the sufferings through which I go, through the attitude of patience, to use these for the development and the strengthening of life, learning lessons out of my trials and sufferings and afflictions, so that I may be better, that I may grow spiritually, then that affliction and that trial or trouble, or whatever it may have been, will not have accomplished anything in me except to make me weaker spiritually. But put patience with suffering and with affliction and with trial. And as you're passing through the trial, learn how to be more sympathetic toward others. Learn how to be more understanding of others. Look at the trial and say, how can I use this to help me become closer to the Lord? To live a better life. To appreciate more spiritual things. And when patience does that with whatever trial in life I have, then I'll be better. I was real interested in the fact that the cardiologist that I'm using here in Gadsden is a fine man, naval cardiologist. Though I had one of the best that I know of in Birmingham, he's equal to, or in many ways I think maybe a little bit superior. Yet at the same time, when I went back to him for my 6-month checkup, he came in the room to see me. I knew that he had had heart surgery and had some bypasses. And I said, how are you doing? He said, I'm doing pretty good. But he said, I understand you much better than I did before. And I heard him make a speech down at the Catholic Hospital to a group of cardiac patients. He said, I used to think that I understood my patients, but he said, I really didn't. But he said, I do now. The patience that it was required of him as he went through that surgery and now is trying to get back on his feet gave him an understanding of his patients that he never had before. Wouldn't it be fine if we could learn out of our afflictions and trials in life the value and the meaning of patience and long-suffering so that I can look at that event and raise the question, how and in what way can I use this to make me better and to help me grow in faith, in love, in understanding, and in patience, be a better person? That's what happened to Job. And that's what Galatians 5:22 says. Long-suffering. Patience must be added to love and joy and peace. If you're not a Christian, you cannot learn nor practice patience. That's the fruit that comes out of the impact of the gospel in a person's life. Let me encourage you this morning to believe that Jesus Christ is God's Son with all of your heart. To give up every sin in your life, to despise and abhor it. Confess before this audience the deity of Christ, your only hope and your only Savior. And then be buried with the Lord in baptism to begin that new life and develop and increase these in your life as you grow day by day.